Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Midlothian Audit Committee. I'll start, as usual, with the welcome and introductions. My name's Mike Ramsey. I'm the Independent Chair.
I'm Grace Vickers, Chief Executive.
Gary Fairley, Head of Finance and Service Support and Section 95 Officer.
Alan Turpey, Legal Services Manager and Monitoring Officer.
Elaine Greaves, Principal Auditor.
David Gladwin, Financial Services Manager.
Carl Molesmeyer, Accountant.
Stephen Reid, External Auditor.
Sarah Croft, External Auditor.
Mary Smith, Director of Education, Communities and Economy.
Peter De Vink, Non-Voting Member of the Audit Committee.
Councillor Peter Smale, Provost.
Councillor Kenneth Beard.
Councillor Derek Mulligan.
Councillor Jim Muirhead.
Janet Ritchie, Democratic Services Officer.
Thank you very much. Can I assume apologies from Councillor Parry and Councillor Hardy?
Correct.
Thank you very much. I take this opportunity to welcome and congratulate the new Chief Executive, Dr. Vickers, on assuming a role, and hope that we can work together to improve Midlothian services in future. Welcome. The order of business as stated on the agenda, are there any requests for amendment? There being none, no declarations of interest. Being none, we have no minutes of previous meetings. This being a special meeting, the minutes of our previous meetings will be presented to the next scheduled audit committee in September. We turn to the public reports. Mr. Fairley will start with a presentation around the audited accounts, and then we'll look at the detail. Mr. Fairley's agreed to take points of clarification questions during his presentation, but if any substantial questions can wait till the end of his presentation, that would be helpful. And any specific questions on the substance of the accounts can obviously be dealt with under 5.2 when we look at the substance of the accounts rather than the way they have been prepared. So that being said, Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Chair. I suppose we brought the accounts in terms of the regulations to the Audit Committee to consider the unaudited accounts, and rather than just go straight into the what is a rather hefty and technical document, just a quick walk through the document itself to help you understand what's in the accounts and why it's there. And also, I suppose, that ties back into Audit Committee's development day to help you fulfil your role as as an Audit Committee. So if I could start just the sort of start getting technology to work. I'm pressing the right button, Janet. I'll just do it from the keyboard. So, apologies about that. Really, the presentation will just cover some highlights from the accounts in terms of key numbers. I want to just touch on the regulations that govern the preparation and then the publication of the accounts, the timetable that we're in from the 31st of March through to the completion of the audit and the signing of the audited accounts. Just to go through the key statements in the actual document itself and touch on them, and as Mike says, we can touch on any detailed questions as we go through the day. Then look at the year-end position in terms of where we are, what the balance sheet tells us at the year-end, and where we are on usable reserves in particular. And I'll just touch on the difference between the accounts themselves, the technical documents, and how we track financial monitoring during the year, and a bridge between those two sets of figures that you'll see. So in terms of some highlights, the accounts show a general fund revenue position of an overspend of £622,000 for the year. The detail behind that has been reported into Council, and that outturn report went to Council back in June. the HRA position also to Council in June, an underspend on the housing revenue account, which enhances the reserves, which in turn are used to support our new build development. In terms of the balance sheet, property, plant and equipment are assets. We see a £13.3 million increase over the year. Pension liabilities are another big figure on the balance sheet. We've seen a reduction of £24.3 million in that liability that sits on the balance sheet. And in overall terms in the year, capital expenditure was £25.6 million between the school estate, the housing estate, etc. The value of our assets on the balance sheet, £641 million. And against that asset base, the borrowing to support that capital investment over the years now stands at £244 million. This document that is set for the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy and LASAC, the governing body, the regulations are the Bible, if you like, in terms of how we prepare, how the team prepares accounts and ends up with the document that you see in front of you as part of the agenda. And we've worked, so from 31st of March, in fact, before 31st of March, the finance team have worked through the code of practice, the detailed requirements, and all the accounting entries that land us on the set of accounts that you see in front of you. So that's what governance, what's in the accounts, and why we do things the way we do them in terms of the accounts. And that really covers off how we prepare the accounts. Scottish Government publish a statutory instrument, which is the 2014 Local Authority Accounts Regulations, and that governs issues around the management commentary, what goes into that. It also governs the sign-off protocols in terms of how we go from an unaudited set of accounts through to the process where colleagues in EY will sign the audit certificate and the audited accounts will come back to Council. It sets out who signs what and why they sign it. The main signatures in terms of approving accounts are myself in terms of statement of responsibilities and the balance sheet and the accounts, the chief executive and the leader around the governance statement and other statements in the accounts. We publicise accounts, so once the unaudited accounts came forward in June, we went through a period of public inspection in early July. There were no objections to that. But the regulations set out the procedures if someone were to object to the actual unaudited accounts. And that gives people access, I think the language is all bills, books and vouchers, so you can, you know, in terms of that inspection, people can come in and look not just the accounts themselves, but the detail behind that. We then go through the process that we're in at the moment of auditing the accounts, which will lead us to, in Midlothian's case, the audit committee on the 25th of September, where we will bring back the audited set of accounts for this committee's consideration. So that's the two sorts of regulations that govern how we prepare the accounts, how we publicise and sign off on the accounts. And that's it's not the best slide in the world, apologies, but it just tries to put a timeline in there in terms of the journey over the period. And we're really sitting around, you know, as we get towards the end of August. We're at the latter stages of the audit. In fact, we have an audit clearance meeting this afternoon, and then it's full steam ahead to get the revised accounts to this committee on the 25th of September. I suppose, on reflection, we're in a bit of a transitional period this year, and what I would expect next year, in fact, we've already got it in the draft committee timetable, which is that the audit committee would have a meeting in June to consider the unaudited accounts, so consider them much earlier than the process. So we've revised the audit committee timetable to allow that. So the timetable, we'll see a shift next year. If I then turn to the accounts themselves, the key statements, and I've cross-referenced them to the page numbers in the actual accounts themselves, so that's the second set of page numbers rather than the agenda ones. The first one is really the expenditure and funding analysis, which shows how expenditure is used and how we funded that expenditure from the sources of income that we have. And it also shows how expenditure is allocated across all the services. So there's an extract just of the, it's probably hard to read in there, but it's page 32 and 33 of the accounts. Probably best if there's detailed questions on that, we can come back to that in terms of any of the specific numbers that appear in those actual statements. So that's the first key statement in the accounts. The next, a really important one, is the movement in reserves. So that shows how things have changed from the start to the end of the year in terms of the different reserves the council holds. Importantly, on the cash reserves, general fund, which members of the council will be well aware of, is an area we've discussed in the full council meeting. The HRE reserve, capital fund, repairs and renewal, etc., and then the unusable reserves. And it shows what the elements are, what the breakdown of what's happened to those reserves during the year to arrive at that movement. And it ties it back to the statutory need to have the general fund and HRA balance and strike a balance on those accounts. That's a really important part of the accounts in terms of the information it gives, so you can see what's changed during the year. And again, just an extract there in terms of the read across to the document. We then go to the comprehensive income and expenditure account. So again, how resources are generated and expended, but that's reported in accordance with international financial reporting standards. And it really shows a consistent operational accounting surplus or deficit in accordance with those standards. So it's in a read across. It gives a consistency across councils, but a consistency more widely in terms of the standards. Again, that's just a wee extract in terms of the detail in the document. The comprehensive income and expenditure, it's hard to read as a table, but I think it's important just to give you a flavour for where the money goes. And in terms of that expenditure, the net expenditure in the comprehensive income and expenditure account sits at £223 million. And you can see from the graph there just how it's spread across the services. And no surprise, the big spend areas of education and adult social care in terms of those net expenditure figures. Next one, important, and the accountants in the room will be more than familiar with the balance sheet. That really shows the position at the year end. We struck a balance, and that shows the assets of the council, the current liabilities of the council, the current assets in terms of debtors, etc., and also the reserves of the council. To the top half of the balance sheet will arrive at net assets, and the bottom half the various reserves. And again, happy to take any questions. The balance sheet is then followed by a cash flow statement, which tries to, or attempts to, look at the actual how cash moves rather than accounting entries during the year. So that's the key financial statements that we've got. If I touch on the balance sheet a little bit more in terms of some of the numbers from that for your attention. Firstly, in terms of an overview of the balance sheet, breaking it down into the key headings. Long-term assets principally are property, plant and equipment, sitting at £650 million. Our current assets, including debtors, £95 million. Liabilities of £94 million. And longer-term liabilities, principally borrowing, £278 million. So that gives us a net asset base before we look at pension liabilities of £372 million. The balance sheet and the unaudited account sits with a pension liability of 93.8. So if you like, the net worth of the council is £278 million. That 278 split between cash reserves and non-cash reserves. Just drill down a little bit further. in terms of those the top part, the long-term assets. So of the £649 million plant and equipment, community and intangible assets, sits at £641 million. You see from there, the two big numbers on the page are the value of our housing stock, which sits at £268 million, and all our other landing buildings, our schools, our leisure centres, etc., at £310 million. So those are the two big chunks of assets that the Council owns and operates, and they're all used in the delivery of services. That's the sort of top half of the balance sheet. In terms of the bottom half, we have usable reserves of at the year end of just under £67 million. General fund reserves sitting at just under 11, the HRA balance just under 34, a capital fund 19.5, and a repairs and renewals fund of 2.9 million pounds. The difference between that and the net assets is unusable reserves, which relate to principally to the revaluation of assets. The difference of what the asset cost us in terms of money we borrowed when we constructed it and the actual book value that's come about through revaluation, etc. I've just given a bit more detail in terms of what we reported to Council at the year end in terms of the general fund balance. Because you look at the headline figure of £10.777 million, but it's important for Council and Audit Committee to recognise that there are commitments against that already. Budgets are earmarked for transformation. Budgets that are being carried forward under the flexibility rules we've got that will be spent in the current financial year, and budgets that are devolved and returned to head teachers under the DSM scheme. So at the year end, the unallocated, the usable part of the reserve, the rainy day fund, if you like, was £4.337 million. And indeed, we've reported to Council earlier in the month a deterioration in that through the quarter one monitoring. So it's the reserve position we projected at the quarter one was significantly less than that, and it's significantly less than what I would recommend to Council. So that's an issue for Council going forward in terms of the sustainability because of the reserve position. The accounts aren't just about those statements. There are a number of other key documents in it. And I think a really important part is the first few pages, the management commentary, which really is the narrative that tries to explain the numbers to people that aren't accountants, to the layman. So that's a really key part in terms of helping the reader of the accounts understand the context of the Council, its strategic direction and its priorities, and how that ties in with its financial strategy and its financial position. The statement of responsibilities sets out the roles of the Council as a body, and as me as the proper officer, the Section 95 officer responsible for financial stewardship. We have the annual governance statement, a key document in terms of the Council's overall governance position. My colleague Alan Turpey leads on the preparation of that, but it's a key part of the overall document. And also the remuneration report, a requirement to set out remuneration relating to key officers and also elected members. We then have within the document three other supplementary accounts. The housing revenue account, so as a council we need to account separately for all of our housing activity, and that's self-contained within the HRA account itself. The council tax income account, which provides the detail of what's been billed, the discounts, etc., that arrive at the council tax income that the council takes through to its income and expenditure accounts, and the same for non-domestic rates. So those are the documents themselves. Some headline figures in terms of the numbers. So if we look at the comprehensive income and expenditure statement, that shows the council's gross expenditure as a headline figure of £373 million, with gross income of £149 million, arriving at the net expenditure in that statement of £224 million. I think, and it's a challenge we've had at the Audit Committee in discussions about the link across to how we track financial performance. So in the monitoring reports to Council, we talk about net expenditure in the terms of the historic reports. We had a budgeted net expenditure of £202 million and an actual net expenditure of £204 million. So the bottom half is how we track financial performance during the year and through to the year-end at Council. The top half is how we are accounting in accordance with the rule book. And what the next page really does in terms of the is build the bridge between those two. There are accounting entries in one set of figures that aren't in the other. And what I'll do is, through Janet, we can attach a copy of the presentation to the minutes of this meeting. But what this slide attempts to do is just start with the figure that's in the comprehensive income and expenditure account and show the key adjustments that take it back to how we track performance. When we track performance, HRA, we keep it separate, so we take that net surplus out. The comprehensive income and expenditure account reflects our capital accounting entries, so depreciation of assets, etc. In terms of tracking for performance, we look at what's the actual debt repayments and interest, the mortgage payments that are going out the door, the cash that's going out the door. I think I've got that the right way around. In terms of the statutory adjustments and also pensions, we account for pensions on a cash basis. What we're paying out to the pension fund is an employer contribution rather than the liabilities and the entries that we're required to account for in accordance with International Accounting Standard 19. So those are the sort of the four key differences to go from what you see in accounts and what you see in a detailed monitoring report. The accounts also contain group accounts, and for the Council, the group activities are really focused on the Midlothian Integration Joint Board. So we've got a 50% share of that board, a controlling interest in terms of how we that entity, and therefore we consolidate that into the group accounts. And in each of the financial statements, we've got group figures shown. We also have, although they're not very significant, common good funds and trusts, and the values are set out there. They're in the tens of thousands of pounds rather than the millions of pounds in terms of the other entries. So it's a very small group. Other councils have much more diverse arrangements than us in terms of the group statements. So that's a run through of the accounts. I suppose I'll touch on, just sort of finish off on what's next. This committee meets again on the 25th of September, and what I've set out is what the 2014 regulations require the committee to do and then what follows. So on the 21st, really the aim is to approve those accounts for signature and for that to happen before the end of September. And then a range of officers and the leader of the council will sign the management commentary, statement of responsibilities, the governance statement, the remuneration report, and in my own name, the balance sheet. So that's the protocol that we're looking towards for the 25th of September meeting. And that will come alongside audit committee getting a revised set of accounts that reflects the conclusion of the audit. And that will include changes to the governance statement and indeed the management commentary as we improve those. So that's a hopefully brief but quick run through of the what's in the accounts themselves. Happy to take any questions at the moment or to pick up on detail as we go through the more formal part of the agenda, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions, members? Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Gary. I'm not sure whether we're going to have full time today to give this document justice. We have a planning committee starting at 2 o'clock in this room. I think Gary sort of started off by talking about it in his document. They talk about this report being technical in places. I think, coming from a layman's point of view, that is the biggest understatement I've heard this year. I think the reality is, if accounts were set out to be understood by laymen, somebody's got it badly wrong, I'm going to tell you, because the support I've needed to even get the basic grasp on these issues I'm with no financial background. My colleagues to the right here might can understand some of this stuff, but it's been a fight. Gary, I have a few questions. Can I say thank you to yourself and your staff for helping me considerably getting through this? But I have a few questions. I have a main one here just on when you were talking about the reserves and that. For reading this document, I think it's page 75, we seem to have a usable reserve of £212 million. It didn't sort of tally up with the figures that you keep talking about. And I've probably had this explanation before, but can you give us an explanation of the significant and non-cash entries in the accounts that sort of lead to that?
Yeah, so I touched on in terms of the balance sheet, so I just find the right page in this document. It doesn't matter how many times you open it, yeah. So in terms of the total reserves of the council and the balance sheet, we struck a figure of just under £279 million. £212 million is what we've classified as unusable reserves. So they're not cash you can spend. The vast majority of that comes from the capital adjustment account, and those are detailed on page 75 through to page 77. So we have the capital adjustment account and the revaluation reserve, and those are really the entries that flow from the revaluation and the treatment of assets on the balance sheet. So when we build a new school, we pay the contractor the actual construction cost, and we borrow money through the loans fund to pay for that. At a point in time, we'll then over the life of that asset, we'll revalue it, or indeed we'll depreciate it, or indeed we might even impair it, i.e., write off some of the value. Those non-cash entries, if we take an asset on the balance sheet, we increase its value. We record that in the revaluation reserve on the unusable reserve. So it's principally the difference between the value of the asset in the balance sheet and what it costs us to actually construct the asset. I suppose I'll look at it as an example for ourselves, the difference between what your house is worth and what your mortgage outstanding is. You can't go out tomorrow and spend it on your holidays unless you refinance your house. So it's intangible in that respect, if that helps as an understanding. The other key entries in there are listed, but the other side of there's a pension liability on the balance sheet. There's also a pension, a negative reserve on the balance sheet. Some of the smaller ones, the employee statutory adjustment account, which really at the year end we strike a difference between what people have earned in terms of their annual leave entitlement, etc., and what we've accounted for. So our leave year runs for non-teaching staff from October through to September. So at the year end, we've got people have earned holidays but haven't taken them, so we make a statutory adjustment to try and give a true reflection in the accounts. And that's when things get really, really technical in terms of the adjustments. And if that's not technical enough, then we make adjustments in terms of the available for sale financial instruments and financial instruments themselves, fair value accounting in terms of how we account for loans, etc. That gets to the really technical part, but again, it's all money that's recorded on the balance sheet but can't be spent, can't be used to build assets or fund expenditure. I should say, in terms of my colleagues David and Callum, I'm much more familiar with the detail behind all of these accounting entries. In fact, do all the work to arrive at these figures. So, you know, if you want to drill down, we can touch on that. But conscious of time,
I certainly think I'll be looking for follow-up meetings just to get a clearer understanding of some of this stuff. I have quite a few questions, but I'm aware there's many members around here, so I'll let other people in first.
Councillor Smale.
A theme that we've had in many years is the question of fair value accounting for our assets, and in general this has tended to reduce the asset base of the council. But looking forward, I'd like to query what the accounting effect will be when we come to the later stages of the PFI contracts. I'm particularly thinking of Dalkeith, which has now had many years on the stocks. We, as I understand it, our PFI payments are expensed to the general account, but at some point we might have the opportunity to revalue these schools and perhaps reverse out some entries which would benefit the general account, or would this simply be a matter for the capital accounts who are still stuck with a very low level of general reserve?
So in terms of the accounts, they show the assets, so for example the Dalkeith Campbell sheet is on our balance sheet as an asset, and then we show the liability that's still outstanding under that contract on the balance sheet. So over the remaining life of that contract, that liability will come down. We'll continue to revalue the asset in accordance with accounting practice. So I suppose at the last day of the contract, there will be an asset on the balance sheet and no longer a liability on the balance sheet.
Yeah, I think the issue for me is these are 30-year contracts, but the useful life of the school might be much longer than that, in which case there may be a positive accounting adjustment on some basis at some point.
Yes, I said we would continue even through the life of the contract and beyond to revalue the asset and examine its useful life and then depreciate the asset over its remaining useful life in terms of the accounting code. But that the other side of that, Provost, it would then be an adjustment on the unusable reserves rather than on the cash reserves of the council.
Considering that we've expensed all the money in these PFIs, is that the only accounting treatment that's open to us?
That would be my expectation, that would be the only treatment open to us at that point. But it's something I can certainly pick up on as we get towards the end of the contract. We'll look at any other issues that arise that we need to pick up on.
Mr. De Vink.
Well, I have great empathy with the leader of the council when he finds this all very difficult. I find it very difficult myself. And I've got a lot of questions to ask. And I would like to start off with page 68, which is page 76 out of 110, when I see that the analysis of cash and cash equivalents have gone from 83 to 74. But then I find it a bit difficult when I look at the next page, page 69, where we suddenly have the age analysis, and we go from 257 to 241. Could I first of all hear what is the total amount of money that we put at risk, a risk that I still for years have found a very irresponsible risk, something that makes us about £250,000, but if anything went wrong, we could lose tens of millions, and I would like to have a real understanding better than what is given here in this paper. That's my first question.
So the accounts break down the cash and cash equivalent over those periods that are shown over across pages 60 and 69. In terms of the position, the council, in terms of its treasury management activity, will invest cash reserves in accordance with the treasury management policies. So it's a very fluid. The figures change from one year to the next based on the cash flow of the council and the borrowing requirements, the level of reserves, etc. at the point in time. So the figures do change during the year and, of course, comparing one year end to the next. But I suppose the assurance I would give this committee is that all of the activity in terms of investing that money is carried out in accordance with the Treasury Management and Investment Strategy that's approved by Council. And indeed, we brought forward some revisions to that policy back in Council in June.
Sorry. I find that a very difficult to understand explanation. We have seen that our risk, as far as the market, the money market is concerned, has gone down from 83 million to 74 million.
Yeah, so that's not all investments. Some of it is just simply the cash in our bank account with the RBS at the year end. So it's a combination of short-term investments through the treasury management policy and just striking a balance in terms of what the bank account reconciliation highlighted landed on as a figure at the year end.
I too scribbled a query about the age analysis table totaling 257 million in 17 and 241 million. At one stage, I thought I was going mad, and these are actually the liabilities. We don't actually deposit stuff for 50 years, do we? Unless it's an analysis of the throughput, because I know that if you look at the volume of transactions and short-term investment and money market, it is far higher than the year-end of 78 million. It's of the order of 300 million plus. Happy for this to be taken offline, if you'd prefer.
I think it comes back to Councillor Milligan's point in terms of the level of detail that's in the accounts. But yeah, happy to pick up on the specifics, and just what I've been doing as you've been speaking is just trying to remind myself of the link back to the balance sheet and that respect in terms of those numbers on the statements. But happy to pick that up.
And the other query was on the page that former Councillor Devink pointed out, page 76, where the first table amounts at 31st March 2018, 74,107. All of a sudden, when we do an age analysis, that becomes 83,808. That didn't seem to reconcile.
Happy to pick that up in terms of detail away from here.
The other question I have is on page 80 out of 110, or page 72, where I see that the bad debt provision has actually gone up over the period. Now, it's only by £1 million, but I thought we had this bad debt addressed and that we were going to never be able to recover some of the bad debts. But how could it now have gone increased? I find rather difficult to understand.
So if I take you back, when the council sets its budget in terms of council tax, it makes an assumption that they won't collect 100%, around about 97%, I think, if my memory serves me right, in terms of what we would budget to collect for council tax. But in terms of the accounts, what we show is that through the council tax income account, the supplementary statement, the total amount that has been billed for council tax, and we make a prudent assumption of the bad debt provision that should sit against that. And that's the figures that we arrive at here. So, and that goes back to the introduction of council tax in the 90s. The overall accumulated debt sits at just over £30 million, and at present we've got a bad debt provision of 28.5. As a council, we have probably a lower than average in-year collection for council tax, but we do catch up and exceed budget. So what we'll see, and we would see it in the financial monitoring report, would be an overachievement of council tax against the figure we'd budgeted in the year, because we've collected some of that outstanding debt. We would then write off debt when it is recoverable and we can't collect it. We would write it off in the account, and the bad debt provision, the entries behind that, would reduce the bad debt provision, then reduce the gross debtor, but the net position would stay broadly at £1.6 million.
But to me, it is a charade to have a bad debt provision of £28 million when we will never be able to recover that anyway. And we're talking about the poll tax. I mean, for heaven's sake, that's 30 years ago.
So we have written off debt that is recoverable, and that would include the vast majority of non-collected community charge debt. The bulk of that figure relates to council tax. Again, it's the importance of preparing accounts that reflect the code of practice in terms of how we account for the council tax debtor and account prudently for a bad debt provision to comply with the code.
Bentley, two more questions I have.
Sorry, Mr. Devine, can I bring Councillor Milligan in for a moment back to you, seeing as time's pressing?
Yeah. Sure. Gary, I was just... I'm aware the financial performance and sustainability is really an issue for the council, and we've taken some really good decisions in June. We agreed the financial and capital strategies and the actions we've taken on the quarter one reporting in August earlier on. But one of the things I've got a bit of concerns about is on page 88, when we talk about contingent liabilities, the child who's abuse claims, at some stage or another, we're going to have to put a figure to what that liability could be. Now, if you take where our reserves just now, that's going to massively worsen that, I would suspect. At what stage do you think that figure will be brought into play, and has anybody put a ballpark on what that figure's going to be? Because we're not in the greatest position at the moment with reserves, and that's simply just going to make it worse.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We disclose a contingent liability because at the time when we completed the accounts, we knew that these claims would come, but we couldn't quantify the value of them or indeed what element of that liability would fall on the council. Today, that remains a position as far as I'm aware, but in the process leading up to concluding the accounts and signing them, I'll take assurances from my colleague, Mr. Turpey. In terms of looking forward, I would anticipate that in the current financial year that we may need to move from a contingent liability to making a provision in the accounts for liabilities, which would then fall to be met from the general fund reserve. And as you say, that would exacerbate our reserves position, and that's something through the remainder of the year and the lead up to the 1920 budget we need to address through the financial strategy.
Sorry, I might be pushing us. Is there any indication at all, any kind of ballpark figure here at all across Scotland as to where councils are going to have to find?
I've seen national figures quoted, but again, what they don't do is highlight who'll meet that liability. There's insurers involved, there's other councils involved. You're going back over a significant period. Perhaps Alan could give you some more update in terms of the legal position.
Chair, I think the answer to that question is that review hasn't happened yet for us. We're sitting with three claims at the moment, all of which are with our claims handlers, who have accepted responsibility for the time being with them. We don't have none of the figures have a, as far as I'm aware, actually have a set claim. We're really at the very early stage of this, so I think not yet is the answer. I do appreciate it's not a satisfactory answer for the committee, because somewhere down the line there may well be a deluge of claims, but what we're experiencing in Midlothian, what we're hearing from other councils, is it isn't happening yet.
Chair, thanks for that. I just think it's really important that, for a layman's point of view, that if we have a train coming down a track, I want to ken what size that train is, and I didn't want to land where you're walking in the door one day and say we've defined £10 million for liabilities and we're sitting with a reserve of four.
Mr. Devine?
I've got two more little small things. First of all, I see that, you know, the trade creditors has gone slightly down, but how many of those trade creditors could become bad debts?
So we talk about trade creditors, Mr. Divink, that's the money.
No, sorry.
Trade debtors.
Yeah, sorry, debtors. Sorry, I apologise. No. That was a slip of the tongue. Sorry, a moment of the general reserve has gone down by £7 million. Could you just explain where that £7 million has occurred?
So we set that out in the movements in the general fund reserve, and indeed I think somewhere I've got the so partly the financial performance during the year, and also in the year there was a planned utilisation of reserves by council. So when it set its budget, the council agreed that it would spend £3.9 million. So yeah, when the council set its budget, it was just shy of £4 million that utilised. We had a voluntary severance scheme that operated during the financial year, and we accounted for costs of just over £2 million, and that was the bulk of the movement from the £17 million down to the £10 million. So the budgeted utilisation of reserves by the council at that point, and the money we've used through 2017 and 18 in terms of voluntary severance packages, which when we reported those back to council had an average payback of around about a year.
Finally, new buyers. I'm looking to discover where that potential loss of £10 million is somehow represented in the papers.
So on page 88 of the accounts, sorry, I don't have the agenda page number in front of me, note 36 is a note on contingent assets. So really that sets out how we've accounted for the issue. We haven't shown any asset on the balance sheet in terms of recovery, but we've disclosed a contingent asset that we'll obviously, as we go, as the legal proceedings, etc., flow through, that will crystallise into either an asset or not.
But I understand that we lost the first round in the courts, so the chances of us getting another bite of that cherry is unlikely.
Ms. Tully.
Chair, the loss that Mr. Durant refers to is that we had initially brought actions against three parties. One of those parties, Bracewell Stirling, brought in a fourth party. So we had four parties we were seeking to get our reparation from. The court has ruled out Bracewell Stirling from it, and accordingly there, people they brought in, Blyth and Blyth, have also been ruled out. We are continue against the other two parties and are seeking to bring Blyth and Blyth in ourselves to the action. So we continue to proceed against three parties for the same sum. We have lost one of the defenders. We've lost the argument against one of the defenders. We haven't lost anything in our claim in general. It's just who ends up, if we are successful. There's now one in three chance of that, rather, as opposed to one in four.
Thank you. Councillor Smale.
Gary, in your initial slide, you indicated a negative variance against budget of about £600,000. Would it be fair to say, although I realise you can attribute the variances to many swings and roundabouts, but that is approximately the same as the unexpected negative cost of the Beast from the East? This fell into the financial year to 31st March 2018.
I do have an extract from the final outturn report. So exceptionally severe winter was we reported to council about 686. The overspend is the net overspend was 622. But we talk about gross net. When you gross that up, there are a number of other issues in there. The overspend is certainly not just attributable to the winter weather.
But if the winter weather had not happened, we would have been remarkably close to budget.
Indeed, but we would have had significant favourable and demand-led swings. So let's look at the bigger picture, not just the bottom line.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Gary, sorry for the continual layman questions here. I noticed under the remuneration statement that are there officers missing for that? Are there senior officers missing for that statement?
No. So the and you put me on the spot. I suppose the remuneration statement requires us to report the remuneration of those officers, proper officers, so the monitoring officer, chief executive, chief social work officer, head of education, and myself, along with senior officers who report directly to the chief executive. So the regulations define which posts and which posts relative to the chief executive must be disclosed. So yeah, it only includes some heads of service, and it includes Alan as legal services manager, for example.
Councillor Smale.
I'll be brief because we've had long debates on the question of the scale of our Treasury management book. But I'd just like to ask about the process. I believe SIPFA have new guidance on Treasury management. I'm conscious that we have a much bigger book than our total reserves. And at one stage, I thought our policy was simply to have a book that was equivalent to the reserves. Are the auditors confident that we are following the SIPFA guidelines and that we're not doing anything that would be abnormal for a council of this size?
Mr. Reid.
Thank you, Chair. So I think if I'm correct in understanding, the new guidance that you're referring to comes in from this financial year, so not the financial year currently under audit. It was the extant guidance that applies then. In terms of my responsibilities, what I'm focused on is ensuring that the reporting, that there is a Treasury management strategy in place and that is properly reported and approved, and that there is monitoring reported against that and compliance with the key indicators set out within the SIPFA. The extant SIPFA guidance is reported to members to allow them to make informed decisions. So I do consider that governance aspect as part of my auditor responsibilities.
Councillor Muirhead.
Pages 75 of the accounts, the previous page 74, set out the liabilities and reserves for pensions, and they've gone down for 118 million to 93,750. There's an issue with the actual accounts of pension fund pointing to a material difference from the estimates used by the actuary. Is that right? Can you update us on what effect that might have, what kind of impact that might have on the council?
There was an issue flagged by colleagues in EY earlier in the audit process, and perhaps Stephen can explain the background to it. Just before coming into audit committee, David, I think I'd received a new report from the actuary that gives us the revised figures, so David could update you on the actual numbers.
Through you, Chair, the issue that's been identified through the audit process, and it's not an issue that's confined to the council here itself, yeah. It's facing local government schemes across the UK, is that when the actuaries generate the IAS 19 report, so the year-end actuarial valuation for accounting purposes, they take the numbers and the assets at a point in time. So usually, in all cases, that is before the year-end of the pension fund. So they take an estimated asset number at the year-end, and when you see the asset fund accounts, that asset number is different, naturally, because the value of assets move. In previous years, the difference between the estimated assets used by actuaries to generate the accounting entries for local government bodies and the actual asset figure at the 31st of March for the pension fund, those differences have been marginal. Mm. this year for the first time, particularly I think it's with Hymans Robertson, one of the actuaries that's involved in local government, those differences have been greater. And because most local government bodies are admitted members, so for Midlothian of the Lothian Pension Fund, when you take the difference between the estimated assets that the actuaries have used, the year-end asset value in the pension fund, and then apportion the share that's attributable to each of the local government bodies, and in this case Midlothian, you get a difference which is above materiality. So the materiality for the audit, my materiality for the audit, as previously reported, is based on expenditure levels. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember off the top of my head, it's somewhere between 10 and 14 million. Clearly, because you are dealing with vast values of pension assets in the Lothian Fund, you don't need much of a difference between the estimate and the actual before you start to get into something that's material. So hence we raised it with management as part of the audit, and actually we also raised it with Audit Scotland. So this is an issue that's affecting most local government bodies, although I think those involved in the northeast of Scotland aren't impacted, and it has previously impacted a large number of local government bodies, councils south of the border, and they clearly had an earlier sign-off at the 31st of July. And the process where it is material is to request the actuaries to rerun the calculation based on the year-end asset number within the pension fund accounts, and that's what David's received today.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. Yeah, just confirm that we have a further reduction of £8.2 million in our net pension liability as a consequence of the actuaries report that we've just received.
Councillor Milligan.
Chairman, I'm aware of the time, and I did have several other questions here that I would like to go, but there's a planning committee meeting. I think, however, it would be remiss of us not to at least mention that there is still the ongoing inquiry at Fushey Bridge now. There is a police external inquiry and there's an internal inquiry going on. And I think it's worth the minute showing that we're aware of what is happening, that we're not aware of the results of that or anything like that. But I think I would like the minutes to be quite clear that elected members around the table, not members of the audit committee, are very much aware that that's still to be reported back, and I would like it just to appear in the minute.
That's being minuted as you speak. I think it's true. It's certainly something that's in the back of all our minds during the consideration of these accounts. I think to try and wrap up today's meeting shorter than expected, unless there are substantial numbers or questions of these under these accounts still outstanding. We'll obviously have another opportunity to look at the final set with the audit accounts in September. Could I just say, obviously, as further information comes from the Rose investigation, our views may change, but that will obviously be subject to such information as comes forward. Is anyone at this stage expecting any difficulty in September, based on what they currently know, with proceeding towards, as Mr. Fairley was saying in his presentation, the sign-off of the audited accounts, assuming that the external auditors produce the usual qualified report? Is there any issues that are needing addressed over the next few weeks that will get us to the place that we can sign off the accounts in September?
I'm expecting there won't be a problem, but I do need to spend some time ironing out some of the issues we've just discussed and a few typos.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or points? And I'll try and draw the meeting to a close if there are none.
Mr. Turpey.
So, Chief, there is a recommendation within the report, just to ask if that can be addressed.
Chair, it's really just the actual covering report, just asked Council to consider and comment on the unedited accounts, which you've done through the course of the meeting, but it's just to really recognise that recommendation and note that you've done that.
If members are happy, we'll so note.
Good.
Sorry, one last minute question, Mr. Devink.
Sorry about this, but the PPP contracts are still ones that I feel could be challenged, and I would really like to see this enormous expenditure that every year occurs to Midlothian Council to be evaluated.
I think Mr. Fairley commented on that in response to Councillor Smale's questions about the accounting for PPP. As far as these accounts are concerned, they're accounting for the current status. And I'm sure councillors will take forward the thought that if there is an opportunity to challenge these contracts at some point in the future, they will do so. That said, there being nothing else, I'll call the meeting to a close. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yep.